I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. If you've ever seen Lydia Bastianich on television, then you know her signature sign-off invites everyone to the table. We decided to take her up on the offer, so today we're off on another culinary expedition. We have two destinations. Lydia's in the Freight House District of Kansas City, and Italy through the cooking of the restaurant's namesake. As an immigrant to America in the 1950s to the head of a culinary empire, we'll talk with Lydia about the path of her life and career. Learn why family plays a central role in everything she does, how she uses food as a means of cultural enrichment, and join us in the kitchen as Lydia prepares recipes from her latest cookbook. It's Up to Date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. A common question for Lydia Bastianich, known as the first lady of Italian cuisine in this country, is why Italian food here tastes different from Italian food in Italy. Her answer, different soils, different climates, different ingredients, thus different tasting food. Along the way, Italian Americans have adopted by developing their own creations, like spaghetti and meatballs. Lydia Bastianich is well known for her nationally syndicated PBS series and in Kansas City for her restaurant, Lydia's. And that's where we're broadcasting from this morning as we join you on one of our culinary expeditions. We're going to spend a very tasty hour exploring Italian cuisine, and we could have no better guide than Lydia Bastianich, who has a new book out, Lydia's Italy in American. Lydia, it's so good to have you here. Welcome to Up to Date.
Buongiorno, Steve.
Nice way to begin a show. We're also joined once again by Grace Suh. She's my partner on our culinary expeditions. Grace is a writer, an editor, and a former writer for The Pitch. Grace, good to have you, too.
Good morning.
Well, Lydia, why have Americans embraced Italian food for as long as we have? I mean, what is it about Italian food?
It's the Italians.
Yes, it is. It is, though, right?
It is. No, but, you know, there's such a big influx. There has been. Through the centuries, if you will, of Italian immigrants.
Yeah.
And with people come their culture, come their way of life, come their food. And Italian food is just darn good.
Mm-hmm.
It's healthy. It's, I mean, at its best, it's seasonal, it's simple, nutritionally sound.
Yeah.
And, you know, Americans love Italian and love Italy and love the food.
Well, it's almost become, to some degree, comfort food, right? Italians and their association with family, and that just feels so good to everybody, right?
Yeah, Steve, you said the word family, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the big part of Italians is their family. I mean, the mm-hmm. table. You know, it all surrounds around there, and so I think people are innovations and running for all over. You know, where are we going next? What we're really missing is that kind of anchor, mm-hmm. that is the table, and certainly the Italian culture exemplifies that. And what is a table without food?
Yeah. And that's how you got started on your own career. You were cooking for your family as a little girl, right?
I did. I came to the United States. I was rather young. I came at 12 as an immigrant. But I did grow up in a setting with my maternal grandmother, and we had there a courtyard with all the animals. I mean, all courtyard animals, we call them. The ducks, the geese, the rabbits, the pigs. We had a goat. We had all of that. And my grandmother also grew everything. We were self-sustained, you know. And if she had a little extra, she would barter or sell. And so growing up, milking the goat and drinking warm milk from the goat, going to pick the warm eggs under the chickens and making pasta with that, going in and harvest the potatoes with grandma. And mine was, because I was a little girl, was the chore was to, after she picked the big ones, I would sort of look for the little ones. But the potatoes were warm in your hands. And that connection to food, that sort of it's food in a pristine setting is what I was exposed. My reference library of flavor goes back to that. And I think that was the beginning.
Grace, I'm guessing that your kids and certainly my kids don't have experiences like going out in the backyard and milking the goat, right? A whole different kind of a growing up experience, I think.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, you know, we think it's pretty amazing just to get eggs from the farmer's market. That's fresh eggs to us.
Yeah. Well, where do we've heard this before, Lydia, but this idea that spaghetti and meatballs is an American creation, that's going to surprise some people out there.
It is. It's not. You go to Italy and you do not find spaghetti and meatballs. You find the polpette, which are meatballs, but they're presented differently, you know, by themselves like a meat. So let's go back to those immigrants, Steve, and that's where it all kinds of differs, because the cuisine, the Italian cuisine that you're referring to, the Italian-American cuisine here in the States, is not Italian. It is a cuisine of adaptation of the Italians. And the Italian-American cuisine is really part of Americana. Mm. It really reflects exactly what you said, the terroir and all that here in America. You know, when those early immigrants came, even though the tomato is a new world, in Italy, the tomatoes that they use for sauce are the San Marzano. They sort of grew, you know, the Italians, different soil, different tomatoes. So tomatoes that are like a plum tomato that is very dense, very little juice,
very
little
meaty
seeds, and thin skin. And those tomatoes, the San Marzano, will give you a great sauce. When they came here to America, they found the regular tomatoes wonderful, you know, wonderful salad tomatoes, but they were much more acidic, much more juicier, a lot of pits, so tannins. So the sauce here, the Sunday sauce cooked in Italy, was different, because here they had to cook it longer. The bitterness, sometimes the adding of the sugar, which is non-existent in Italy, to the sauce, and the cooking of the much longer time to get rid of the liquid and the juices, so to make it nice and thick.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one big difference is the use of garlic, the excessive use. The use of garlic here in Italian-American cuisine is really, really heavy. In Italy, we use very little garlic.
Huh.
I mean, we use garlic, but we don't kind of grind it up and put it by the spoonfuls. You know, the cloves, we crush it, we slice it. So, you know, the two cuisines run parallel, but they're not the same.
Well, and that's what brings us to your new book, right? That's what your new book is about, Lydia's Italy in America. And if you say that five times fast, you're going to stumble all over yourself, right? Lydia's Italy in America. That's a mouthful.
Lydia's Italy in America.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know what my problem is.
Yeah. But you toured the country getting a sense of what Italian food in this country is all about.
It took me 3 years, actually, to, and all the years before, you know, that as an immigrant, I observed, you know. Going around across the United States, you know, it was exciting and to find really how Italians are all over in all the major cities. Now, I went from Massachusetts, if you will, Boston, Rhode Island, New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, New Orleans, San Diego. These are all major ports of entry of major cities, San Francisco, Chicago, Kansas City, St. Louis, big communities, Italian communities. And in all of these, it was wonderful to see that these communities still exist, still these Italians, even though they're 3-4 generations, still cling on to being Italian.
Yeah.
And they still cook the food. You know, that Sunday dish or two or three that grandma made needs to be on the table on Sunday.
Yeah. We're coming to you live from Lydia's restaurant downtown. We're on one of our culinary expeditions. We're visiting with Lydia Bastianich about her new book, Lydia's Italy in America. We'll be taste testing some good food in just a little bit in the kitchen here. You know, your new book, we talk about the road trip you took, and one of the spots you visited that struck me as so interesting is Arthur Avenue in the Bronx, named after the 21st president. Did not know that.
Yes.
I love what you say about it, and you write this, Lydia. When I want to feel the Italian-American spirit, when I want to smell the aroma of espresso wafting through the air, when I need Italian music to fill my soul, genuine Italian products to fill my basket, Arthur Avenue is where I go. Tell us about it.
It is Arthur Avenue, is up in the Bronx. And the immigrants, the Italian immigrants, settled there because of the building of the botanical gardens and the zoo. Mm. You know, so the whole, and so they found jobs and slowly became a very congenial community. It was close to the city and yet in the suburbs, and they settled there. Italians, not only are they very family-orientated, they're very clannish. You know, they kind of pull their own kind. You know, come here, there's an opportunity. And, you know, there goes, you know, a neighborhood that's being kind of filled. What do they need? They need good food, they need produce, they need fish. And so it developed around that community that needs to be fed. The Italian vendors came. Mm-hmm. And with the vendors, of course, the habits or the treats of music or all those statues or whatever the Italians need to make their life more Italian. And you still find it there.
If you want to join our conversation, our number here, 816-235-2888. You can also get us on Facebook, KCUR's Facebook page, or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. And, Lydia, on Arthur Avenue in the Bronx, there's a man who still works there, Raffaello, the Italian shoemaker, still busy fixing shoes.
You know, I think that one of the things that I maybe missed most, and still do, although we're going kind of in that direction, is those small vendors, the butcher, the bread maker, the shoe fixer, repairman, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And up there, he still exists. And I went in and I said hello to him. And he was selling some new shoes as well, because he says, you know, not many people repair shoes these days. But he was still there. He was giving a service, you know, an old respected kind of service to the community.
It's so funny to me because Americans crave that kind of connection, and yet there isn't enough of it to sort of satisfy most people, it seems to me.
Well, you see, because, you know, we're so, I think, because we are so fast-paced, you know. We're running, I mean, just all over, you know, get in the car, run, you know, if the car is not enough, we get on the train. If that's not enough, we get on the plane. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so where is the room for this little shoemaker in our lives? We need to make time for him, and maybe more of him will come.
You went from the Bronx, you jetted off to San Diego to check out the sardine industry in San Diego. What about it?
San Diego. A great canning industry. It's no longer now. It's kind of, you know, but the sardines, the Pacific Coast, up and down, they have a whole migratory pattern. They mate up north and they come down and then they lay their eggs or whatever, but there's a lot of them. And, you know, there the Sicilian settles. Now, the Sicilians, you know, island, big fishermen, came into the United States mostly through New Orleans. And then from New Orleans, kind of, they went up the Mississippi, you know, in the Midland, like the Midwest here.
You talked about that, and that surprised me, that New Orleans was such an important point of entry. I always considered New York and New York alone.
No. Because it was a cheaper port of entry, and it offered, you know, it was cheaper to land there. It was cheaper to begin your life there. And it offered jobs, you know, because there was the whole development, but also the Gulf. Rich fishing. So there was a lot of jobs, the same like the sardines in San Diego. So this is... So the Sicilian went to San Diego, naturally, and they said, oh, okay. And in Sicily, there's a big industry of canning tuna because they have the tuna and sardines or whatever. And so it was a big canning industry developed. And you know, what's interesting also in these ethnic kind of communities is that one culture moves on and the next generation sort of gets better and they move into the different cities and the next immigrants. So in San Diego, in the canning industry, after the Italian moved, the Asians moved in. You know, that's another...
Right, that's what I was going to say about New Orleans, that it's been a port of entry for Vietnamese fishermen. So, you know, one group supplants the next.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you find that also in San Diego. Now, you know, I guess they can out at sea. They have these factories in the boats. So the industry has withered. But there's a wonderful remnants and sculpture and dedication to these hardworking immigrants that
Well, you've seen her on TV. You're listening to her now on Up to Date. Lydia Bastianich is our guest, owner and the founder of Lydia's Restaurant here in downtown Kansas City. Let's go to some phone calls now, and let's say hello to Elaine from Overland Park. Elaine, good morning. You're on Up to Date.
Thank you. Lydia, my grandparents came from the Trentino Alto Adige region, and I'm always watching your shows in hopes that you will feature more food from there. Yeah, the wonderful trouts with the walnut sauces, the Knetterli, because it is really kind of a mixed region. You sort of get that German flavor in there, too. I've been eating polenta since I was a child, long before it was fashionable in America. And I would just like to see you feature more of that food.
Trentino Alto Adige, it's a great region. Now, Italy has 20 regions, and it is a region not too far from where I come from, Friuli Venezia Giulia, which is to the east. And Friuli Venezia Giulia borders with Austria and then Slovenia. And Trentino is with Austria, so very Germanic. In my last book, Lydia Cooks from the Heart of Italy, I dedicated a whole chapter to Trentino, and I have the Knetterli and the Krauti and a lot, the Strudel and all of those. It's a wonderful region. It's a mountainous region, but it produces some of the best apples in all of Europe, and it has a whole cuisine. You know, like the pasta fagioli, the bean and macaroni soups, soup? They make it with apples. Tomato sauce, they make it with apples. So it really is, you know. So it's a beautiful region. Have you been?
Well, she's no longer there. But you were talking before the show about the use of apples.
Yeah, I saw your video where you made the tomato sauce with the shredded apple. Is that from the same region?
That's the region. That's Trentino Alto Adige. And it's a delicious, simple sauce. Did you like it? Did you make it?
I saw the video, and I thought, that looks crazy.
Try it. It's good.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here on Up to Date. You know, Lydia, your own immigration story, the story of your own family, it was just fascinating to me. When you were 10, you lost your childhood home in Istria, a region in northeastern Italy that I actually got on Google last night and took a look. It's sort of around the top of the country and then off to the east. It was taken over by Yugoslavia after World War II. It became communist. You never even got a chance to say goodbye to your grandparents. Take us back to those days. Why did your family lose your home?
Well, Steve, I think that just the kind of my passion for food. You remember what I just said about my grandmother?
Yes.
That area, was Italian. We were ethnically Italian. Even though on the border, you know, you're kind of the ethnicities mix. But we were Italian. We spoke Italian at home. And when the communists came, when Yugoslavia came, the Iron Curtain went up. We couldn't speak Italian. We couldn't go to church. And so life became very difficult. They wouldn't let the whole family leave. You know, you couldn't even leave. You couldn't do your thing there, and you couldn't leave. So we had relatives on the other side of the border because, you know, it was just divided like that.
And this is in what years you're talking about?
I am talking in 1956.
Yeah.
So you know, the actual end of the war and the signing, I think, was in 1947. That's around when I was actually born. Mm-hmm. And then all of those years, you know, growing up, I guess, 8, 9 years, 10 years, my parents, you know, where are they going to go with small kids? But they decided, and in 1956, my mother, my brother, and I went to visit relatives in Trieste, and my father ultimately escaped because he had to escape because they wouldn't let the whole family. We met in Trieste for 2 years. Then Trieste was hard because of jobs and whatever in the aftermath of the war. We were stayed for 2 years in a immigration refugee camp, political immigrants or refugees, if you will, because then we stood a chance of migrating to the rest of the world. Otherwise, you couldn't. So you had to be kind of put in a holding pen, if you will. And then we came to the United States. Dwight Eisenhower, actually, I remember because it was such a happy day for us when he decided, because even America wasn't taking immigrants after the war, but they made an exception for immigrants fleeing communism, which we fell under, and ultimately we came to the United States.
And that was Dwight. Dwight Eisenhower's decision to,
yes.
to allow you
yes.
to come.
Yes, he put the special quota for the immigrants escaping communism. And in 1958, we came here. So I never knew that I wasn't going to go back, and I never said goodbye to my grandma. I saw her later, 10 years later, I went back to visit. But I think that, you know, Steve, you were asking, my whole passion for food is those sort of initial learning and understanding. And then I carried my grandmother with me with my food, even though, you know, I knew her food was important. And only later did I realize that maybe this is why I'm so passionate about food and my culture and carrying on the culture.
Yeah. Lydia, that is really an arc of a lifetime to have gone from losing your childhood home to the immigration experience to this country, then to your very big success here in America in recent years.
Steve, I'm still, you know, I'm still in awe, if you will, you know, and I'm grateful. But I know that it could only have happened in America. Hmm. There's no other place in the world that this kind of change of life from being an immigrant in a camp to really being, you know, sometimes I'm kind of humbled and almost, you know, is this me?
Yeah, right. Hey, have you been back to your childhood home?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Since communism has sort of dissipated, as we all know. And I think Croatia then came in, and it's a democratic country and whatever. So I went back. Mm-hmm. I went back, and I repaired the home that my grandmother. So I go back to the same courtyard. I need that. That's for me,
wow.
You know. And all the land that was kind of forgotten, because once the communism came in, they had the land that they were working. It was communal land, you know, these communities and nothing. I planted olive trees because I figure I'm not there, but the olive tree is an eternal mm-hmm. tree, and it's in mm-hmm. their honor. So, yeah, I go back, and it recharges me.
Back to some phone calls here with Lydia Bastianich. Pete from St. Louis. Pete, you're on Up to Date, and good morning.
Buongiorno, Lydia. My question is about Cipino. I come from a family from northern Italy, up near Trento, and uh-huh. in the military, I lived out in Seattle for 2 years and fell in love with Cipino, and I'd love to know the origin of that.
Okay, Cipino is Liguria. Cipino is a seafood soup from Liguria, and if you're looking at Italy, you know, 20 regions, I call the northeast, you know, the armpit, the left armpit, that kind of sliver of land is Liguria, and Genoa is the capital. That's where Columbus came from. But they make a soup called Cipino. And in San Francisco, if you live up in the north northwest of the United States, you would encounter Cipino, because all over San Francisco, and I have it in my book also, the San Franciscan thinks Cipino is theirs, but it really is Ligurian. So it's a great seafood soup, and you'll find it in this book, Lydia's Italy in America.
Okay, well, let's take a break. When we come back, Lydia's going to cook for us back in the kitchen. What are you going to be making for us back here for lunch today?
Well, you know, I something on the radio, you know, how do you cook? And we're going to, something that we can communicate that
it's
is
always
practical.
An adventure, Lydia. Yeah.
A frittata, and then we're in Kansas City. I thought a steak, but Italian style.
Okay, we'll give it a rip. Stay tuned for our second half and Cooking with Lydia. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back to the second half of Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's program with author Michael Dirda and Lily Tomlin, you can share them and look at all of our archives online at kcur.org/uptodate. Join us tomorrow for our conversation with Jeffrey Zoslow on his experience co-writing with Congresswoman Gabby Giffords and her husband, Mark Kelly, and their new book. But this hour, we're visiting with Lydia Bastianich at her restaurant, Lydia. I'm also joined by Grace Suh as we go on one of our semi-regular culinary expeditions here at Lydia's restaurant. And Grace, we're back here in the kitchen. It's a little warmer here, and there is some just absolutely marvelous-looking food all around us here as Lydia cooks away just to our right.
This is a gigantic kitchen. It's about 10 times the size of Blue Stems and dozens of people in here. It's completely bustling and lots of cooking going on all around us.
Well, look at we get the brown eggs here. We have some good-looking bread, peppers, onions, all kinds of good things here. Lydia, what do we got going on?
And that's all going into this frittata. Yeah. So here I have some sausages out of the casing, and they're sizzling. Okay, and to that, I'll chop up some peppers, you know, just seed them up and cut them in slices. And then chop up some scallions. You know, scallions are one of those vegetables. I love having it. It's not used a lot, and it's cheap, and it's year-round. It's a great, and so we throw this right into the sausages. Okay, stir it around a little bit. You stir it around, and now we will whisk some eggs that will go in there. But you know what's different about this frittata? I put, and I remember my grandmother doing, stale bread into it, pieces of stale bread. So
you said stale bread?
Stale bread.
Stale bread.
Yesterday's
okay.
bread, instead
yesterday's
of throwing
bread.
It out.
All right.
Okay?
Do this a lot, don't they? Because you do is it called the panzanella, the stale bread salad? Is that an Italian thing?
It's an Italian, but I think it's, you know, it's a consciousness. We do. We use a lot, recycle. We make desserts, we make soups, we make salads, we make frittata. But it's just a great way of thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're green and it's delicious on top of it. So how wrong can you go? So let's cut it into... These are in little cubes, okay? And now we'll whisk some eggs. Steve, Grace, who's going to whisk the egg here?
I'm going to whisk the eggs because that's the one thing in the kitchen I can do. There we go.
Okay.
Look at that whisk. I am good at that. Look at that.
Okay, we're cracking this.
I'm not getting...
You look like a pro.
I'm not getting the yolks yet, am I?
Okay, you're going in a circle. How about whisking it up a little bit?
What do you mean, like what? Come on, show me, man.
Listen to the difference.
Oh, yeah.
You spill on me, you're paying for the dry cleaning here.
You know? It's like the motor now.
You're getting mad at it.
You can do that. Go ahead, let's see.
Steve was just rocking them to sleep.
Yeah, whatever you're doing there, I like this.
There you go. A little salt.
Yeah.
Okay, now... I throw the bread in the egg mixture. I put a little bit of milk and throw the bread right in and let the bread soak up while...
It's custardy.
Yeah, so when you cook it, it gets softer because it is yesterday's bread.
Right.
So it gets softer. Okay, you continue doing that. I'm going to go check on the, you know...
I see how you operate here. What you do is you have people behind you just doing all the work, and you just get to be on the radio and be the star here as I do all the work for you.
What do the generals do in the Army?
Yeah.
Huh?
I'm getting your drift here, ma'am.
All right. Get that right.
I got it right. We're together on that.
All right. So, see? This is nice and golden. The sausages... are nice and golden, the wilted, the peppers, that. And we'll throw that egg and bread mixture right in here. Let it crust a little bit, put it in the oven. And here you go, you have your frittata. Okay, Grace, handed it over to you?
Yeah, ready for the big pour.
Okay. That's it, collect everything. Okay. So that's great. So that's cooking. You let it slowly cook on the bottom. And if you put it in the oven, it finishes from the top. But if you don't want to heat up the oven, just lower the flame a little bit and you cover it. You cover it with a lid and it will cook. And once it forms the crust on the bottom, you can even flip it. And by flipping it, you know, so it cooks on the top if you really want it, you can slide it on a plate and then put the pan over the top and you invert it.
Right, right.
Okay.
Then you don't have to worry about your rubber handle on your pan.
Yeah.
That's always my problem with the frittata.
Oh, yeah? In the oven? All right. So now that's cooking. That's developing in the oven a nice top. And let's do the steak. So I did the same. You see the nice sauce? I put some onions, peppers, mushrooms, and some marinara sauce. And that's the sauce. That's the Italian part of the steak. But the steak is Kansas City. Here it is.
Ah.
You see?
That looks like Kansas City steak. Yes, I recognize that.
But it looks like you have a bit of an herbal crust on there. Is that oregano?
What I do, I put a porcini crust. I take the dry mushrooms, and I chop them up, and put a little bit of salt, and I put a little bit of sugar in that. I chop them up in a food processor, almost like a powder, you know, when it's dry. And then that, I make the rub out of that with peppers, sugar, a little salt, a little porcini powder, and then that's beautiful.
And I agree with that approach, by the way. That's a good idea.
Oh,
I'm with you on that. I agree with how you're proceeding here.
Thanks, Steve. he's getting it, Grace.
Yeah.
You have his approval, so you're set to go.
Okay. So, you know, I think you can grill a steak, you know, and we all love to grill, you know, and certainly America is a great country of grilling. But I like cast iron, too. You know, sometimes when you're one or two people and you don't want to set up the grill or whatever, get yourself a cast iron pan, get it nice and hot, and you don't need anything. Maybe just a drizzle of oil on the steak.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. And then you just...
That smells good. That looks good. Now we're getting somewhere.
Right.
You're speaking to me now.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're getting the men part of it, the meaty part of it. Okay.
He's almost too close to that right now.
Yeah. That's just beautiful. Just beautiful.
And so you sear it on one side. And, you know, the important thing is heat it up and don't move it. You know, leave it there. The same if you have even a grill. You know, those beautiful grill marks that the chefs get. You know, you lose them if you move it around. Let it sear, let it get the markings, and then you can flip it up.
How long are you going to leave it there?
Well, it depends on how big the steak is. How do you like it? Rare, medium,
medium,
rare?
Medium.
Oh, okay. Okay, so. Okay. Easy, but it could have stayed there another minute or two.
Okay.
But you see? And so now you leave it there. And you get it nice and crispy like that. You put it on the plate, and you get yourself the sauce. Let's see. I am... Okay. Things are cooking. I'm heating up the pepper. Do you see the peppers and the mushrooms? With just some tomatoes in there. Now, that makes it Italian. I can put in there. You know, I have yellow and red peppers. And here we have the regular champignons.
Yeah.
But you can... sort of grow that. You can put, if you like, if you don't have green or yellow peppers or red peppers, you put the green peppers. You can put, you know, whatever you have in the garden in the summer. That's what the Italians do. Mushrooms, you can put shiitake, you can put porcini mushrooms, you can put anything, you know, and you can build your own flavors into these recipes. And that's how that Italian-American cuisine got started, you know, by making with what you had.
Making do. Now, do they eat a big piece of steak like this in Italy?
No.
That's purely American.
America. Lydia's Italy in America. This is Kansas City here, right? You know, the heart of America, great pastures, great meats. I mean, the Berkshire pork that's coming in, I use it in all of my restaurants. I mean, you know, this is great meat land. And so, you know, you got to do, you know, you according to the region, the terroir, the sea. You eat what's best in that season, in that place.
You roll with what you got. That makes a whole lot of sense. Okay. What else are we going to do here, Lydia?
Okay. So we're just about ready. I think it's medium. I'm going to put that on, and we're going to sit down and go and eat.
Okay.
Are you ready to eat?
I am always ready to eat, Lydia. When I'm here at your restaurant, I'm definitely ready to eat. You know, I just read not long ago that it wasn't too long ago that you actually cooked for the Pope. What did you do there, Lydia? You cooked for Pope Benedict?
Yeah, Pope Benedict was here. It's two years ago, actually. It's going to be, yeah, it's a year ago, actually, but it's almost, it seems like. And it was, as far as professionally, it was the pinnacle of my profession.
I was going to say.
And, you know, the Pope is German. He's very Italian. He's very German. And so I thought about, you know, as I was saying before, I come from the northeast area, so I can cook sauerkraut, I can cook spetzels, I can cook strudel, I can make a great strudel. So I did that for him. And you know what? When he sat down, because we had two dinners. We had Friday with all the cardinals from the United States. And then we had, so that was Friday. I did a fish. I did a soup, very light. The next day, which was Saturday, was his birthday. Mm-hmm. It was the anniversary of his papacy.
Yeah.
And so that's when I did. You know, his mother was a chef.
Oh.
I did not.
I did a little research. And so, you know, usually this Pope or something, they're sort of closed in, you know. The worldly pleasures, it's not what they seek. But I was going to give him some darn good food, and he's gonna taste it.
Why did you cook German for him as opposed to Italian?
Because there you go. Good question.
Yes, I tried to once in a while. Yeah.
I'm enjoying this.
Good.
Because I wanted to go inside of him. I didn't want him as a pope. I wanted to go to him as a human being. So what was he raised on? What did his mother cook for him?
Yeah, okay. German food. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. And when he was finished and we brought out the cake and we sang, and mind you, it was a setting, we were kind of in a house together because this was in the apostolate. You know, he doesn't eat out. So he slept there too.
You weren't in the Vatican then?
No. Mm-hmm. This was in New York. He mm-hmm. came to visit New York and Washington. And when he was in New York, and you remember he had the big speech at Yankee Stadium and whatever, the mass and all of that. Well, at the apostolate, that's the emissary, if you will, from the Vatican to the United Nations. That's where they live. That's where he stayed. He doesn't go to a hotel or a restaurant. And I went in and cooked. And that's on 5th Avenue and 72nd Street. And so we were in the same house. He had his room upstairs. And, you know, and I was downstairs cooking. So it was very, very special. And when we did bring out the cake to wish him a happy birthday and thanks, so, you know, I came, I brought the cake with him. And I can tell you, you know, we gave him a knife and he couldn't cut it. So I took his hand, like a bride and groom, and we cut the cake.
Why couldn't he cut it?
I don't know. He was maybe didn't know or wasn't. It wasn't. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. But I took the liberty. He looked at me and he said, "Boy, this woman has guts." But I didn't. I just did what it came naturally.
Well, how nervous were you to cook for the Pope, Lydia? I mean, that's kind of that's an amazing moment, isn't
the
it?
The anticipation. The planning, I was very nervous. I didn't think I could do it.
I can't imagine you being nervous, though, for some reason.
But I was. Yeah. I was. Once we were in that home, once I had met him, once I had my food, and it was just my food between him and me, then I was very calm, very, very comfortable, and I had a great time. But when we cut the cake, I did ask him, I said, "So, how was the food? Did you enjoy it?" He said, "Those were the flavors of my mother."
Oh, oh, and so you hit a home run.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you enjoy that food too? Is German food something you enjoy?
Well, you know, I come from that area. You know, that is so. We cook with sauerkraut. I cook with sauerkraut as comfortably as I cook with pasta.
Mm.
You know, strudels we make, all of this, you know, the Austro-Hungarian kind of, that area was under the Austro-Hungarian Empire as well. I make goulash, I make spetzels. And maybe I think that's part of why people also like my food, because it's diversified. You know, Italian is a diversified cuisine as it is. But then I have that little German, that little kind of Hungarian, that little Slavic influence on top of it.
Well, were you able to have a conversation with him? Did
yes.
you chit-chat during dinner and just
yes,
talk?
Yes, absolutely.
You talked about what with the Pope? What do you talk about with the Pope?
Oh, no, I wasn't left alone there and talk, but we did. We talked about the food. He asked questions about the wine. We served him our wine, the Bastianich wine. Actually, you know, my son was there, and he described all about the wine. He had questions. Then there was the one of the diplomats of the German embassy, too. They did a little concert, piano and violin. We all sat, about 30 of us, sat and listened to a concert. So yeah, it became, that's why I'm telling you, you know, for me, that experience, it's indescribable because, I was so close.
And you were picked for that assignment, for that task, for that opportunity. Why? How did you get there?
I don't know. I still ask myself. I mean, I do... you know, involved in the Italian, you know, am I pious? I'm a good girl, you know. you know, but I do.
You must have been to get to cook for the Pope.
Good woman, yeah. My girl. But I, you know, I do get involved, you know, in charity work. Who actually suggested was the apostolate, which was Celestino Migliori at the time, like the ambassador from the Vatican. And I guess we had cross paths on different events. You know, I work with UNIFEM, the United Nations Female Organization. Now it's been incorporated in a bigger one. But for the last more than 10 years, I do fundraising for them. I am, you know, concerned about women's issues in third world and women feeding their family. And so you know, maybe all of these things brings you to a place.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're coming to you live this morning as a part of one of our culinary expeditions. We're coming to you from Lydia's Restaurant in downtown Kansas City, and we're joined today by Lydia Bastianich. I'm joined by Grace Suh. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. Lydia now is opening up a bottle of Bastianich wine, right? Yeah, what is it? Tell
I'm
us about it.
I'm opening a bottle of Vespa. And by the way, the Pope drank this too, so don't feel slighted.
You're serving me what you serve the Pope.
Yes.
That may be the highest honor anyone's ever given me in the course of anything.
No, I think, you know, when food is good, I think across the board, everybody eats it.
Well, now you're killing me. That's a beautiful thing to say. You almost got it, yeah. Well, who else have you cooked for besides the Pope, Lydia? I mean, famous people.
The president of Italy, Napolitano. I mean, Pavarotti, Renee Fleming. I'm into
really?
Opera, yes.
Yeah. Here comes some more food.
Gina Lollobrigida.
Yeah. Now, Grace, here comes our steak, right?
That's some good-looking food.
Boy, it's a beautiful food. Describe it for us a little bit. What do we have here in front of us?
Well, they've taken these large steaks and cut them across the grain into smaller pieces and slathered it with this piazzola sauce, which is really a lot chunkier than I would have imagined I guess they call them rajas of peppers. And I like how chunky it is. And I love the way the frittata is presented with this salad on top.
I think Chris Pruitt, our engineer, is moving microphones, but I think he's actually coming in to sample the food. The up-to-date crew is getting a little bit antsy here as we near the lunch hour here. It is absolutely beautiful. Now you're going to get the cork. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Terrific.
The line of popes.
We have an email here from James from Kansas City, Missouri. He writes in with this comment, Lydia, I read a pitch article where a local chef credited part of his training to his time at Lydia's Kansas City. Do you feel training the next generation of chefs is a responsibility that you have moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. That is, you know, I mean, if you're given a gift and this blessings and all of that, and you share it and you enjoy it and you share it with people during, you know, in your restaurants and books. But, you know, the greatest pleasure, I think, is the continuation of this. So who's going to carry on, you know, and being able to influence. And so if a person works or if I am able to mentor them, even for a month or two, there's always something, a little piece of Lydia that will stay with them. And that's something special. And hopefully that will help them and direct them and influence them in achieving their goals.
Hey, how demanding are you back in the kitchen as you work away?
Did you hear the general comment? goes in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. That's what I'm getting at here.
Well, and your children are involved in your business too.
You know, Grace, The children, it's a blessing because, as I said before, you know, the Italians and their families, we always have around for good, for bad, for angry, for singing together. We're always together. But as far as businesses, you know, when I first started, here we are in America. I started the restaurant rather early with my husband. But I wanted an education. I wanted my children to go on. This is America, the land of opportunity. And so they did. You know, my son went on Boston College, got his master and became an analyst for Merrill Lynch on Wall Street. My daughter, Georgetown, ultimately got a PhD from Oxford in Renaissance art history.
That's pretty impressive.
They both worked with me.
Wow.
And it's their choice. They came back. You see, for me, they got their education. They educated themselves. And then they chose that maybe the culture, our story, what we had to say, they can translate it in their own way with their own education. And my son, the business element, expressed the restaurants, you know, growing the restaurants, the wines, and the business aspect. My daughter, she does the research, the books with me. She co-authored this book with me and the past four books. Television research, the stories, the editing comes with me on site. So we film together. And so, you know, both of them within their own specialty developed, entered into this business. And now, you know, they continue in as you know, I mean, successful individuals in their own right, but with the family, which is...
That's incredible.
It's not easy, though, Steve.
No, I get that. And, well, speaking of success, how large is the Bastianich culinary empire these days, Lydia? Because you've grown exponentially here in recent years.
Well, this is my... Let's start from the book. This is my seventh book. I have 12 years of being on public television with my cooking show. The winery, actually, I'm going to pour you a little wine right now.
I keep waiting. It's been a little slow coming, by the way. Thank you.
That's the Vespa that the Pope drinks. Salute.
Salute.
My son came in, but he also partnered with Mario Batali. So all the restaurants that Mario Batali owns are owned with my son or the three of us. So if you're looking at the restaurant, there's about 16 restaurants in total.
Wow.
So it's kind of spread out, but I still kind of look at them as one child at a time, you know. Each one is individual.
16 all over the country. You're everywhere right now.
No, some of my flavors are.
Some of your flavors are. But your restaurants are in California. You're on the East Coast. You're everywhere.
Yeah.
But what I thought was really interesting is Kansas City your first location outside of New York City?
Kansas City was the first out of New York.
Wow.
We had by then three in New York, and then my son, you know, the expansion or whatever, Kansas City. Then we got to Pittsburgh. Then him and Mario went to Los Angeles, Las Vegas. We're even in Singapore now.
Wow. And now why did you come to Kansas City first?
But Kansas City, you know why? Because it's the middle of America. So, you know, because New York is an American city, but it's not. In New York, it's something different. And so, you know, he said, Mom, we're in America. I need to touch America. We need to. And so Kansas City was, you know, the right size city, was big enough city that had enough people and customers, was a vibrant city culturally because, you know, you need all of those things and economically. And so here we are. We found a good pool of workers because that's, you know, Dan Sweeney, who is our chef here, has been here since opening.
Mm.
And he is a Kansas Cityan, and we just love it. You know, Cody Hogan, chef de cuisine, and they hold up the fort here.
You know, the crowd is milling in here for lunch. Grace, give us a sense of what you're tasting and sampling, and it's just lovely food. I'm waiting for the show to end so I can have some of it.
It is really lovely. I'm surprised at how much the flavor is melded in the frittata. I wouldn't have, I think of it as a quick cook thing, and so I'm surprised at how much the flavor of the peppers and the sausages is really permeating the eggs also.
The flavor of?
Of the frittata.
Ah, Okay, yeah.
Oh, and the steak is just so gentle on the mouth, too. So good.
Yeah,
so good.
Is it cooked the way you like it?
Yes, it's very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, we're joined this morning by Lydia Bastianich. We're coming to her from Lydia's Restaurant in downtown Kansas City. And how often do you get into Kansas City, Lydia? How often do you come here?
You know, it's when we do events like today, we're celebrating our anniversary and the release of the book, Lydia's Italy in America. So tonight's dinner, I'll be here all night. We'll be signing books, but also the special dinner will be based on the recipes from the book. So, you know, if I do things, and then whenever I do come out, is that I, you know, whenever I come out, I do other things, like talk.
Well, it's been so good to have you, and thank you for having us to Lydia's here this afternoon. We just really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Grace.
Thank you.
That's our thanks to Chef Lydia Bastianich and her staff here at Lydia's. You can find the recipes from today's show at kcur.org/culinary. You can follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow, author Jeffrey Zaslow on co-writing Representative Gabrielle Gifford's life story. Our music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help today from KCUR's Alana Gordon, Kim Noble, Chris Pruitt, Danny Alexander, and Luke Martin. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date. Thank you.